This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul in صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces shoot dead their Palestinian in the occupied West Bank amid mounting anger over the regime's controversial open fire rules. A ceasefire on the horizon in eastern Ukraine, with Moscow and Kiev agreeing to enforce an earlier truce between Ukrainian troops and pro-Russia forces. Plus, daily COVID infections already at record highs in several European countries as Omicron spreads across the continent.
Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us.
Our top story this hour: Israeli forces open fire on a car, killing one Palestinian in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. 26-year-old Mohammed Isa Abbas succumbed to wounds he sustained after he was shot in the back. He was taken to a nearby hospital in a critical condition, but attempts to save him failed. The incident comes as the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas slams new Israeli rules that give the regime's soldiers more freedom to use deadly force against Palestinians. It says the new Israeli rules show Israeli military leaders criminal behaviors that are based on terrorism and the deliberate killing of innocent people. The new rule allows Israeli soldiers to shoot at Palestinians who throw stones, even if they don't pose an imminent threat. Palestinian journalist Dawood Kutab believes that the new Israeli open fire rules in the occupied West Bank are in violation of international law.
Well, there's two issues here. First of all, on the political level, Israel's prime minister has told Mr. Biden, and has actually acted on that, that he has no plans of negotiating a settlement of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. He's not interested in a two-state solution, and he's not even willing to meet with the Palestinian leadership. So there is no political horizon for Palestinians. There is no future that Palestinians will be free from occupation. And the very basic issue of legitimate resistance, popular resistance, it's legitimized and allowed in international conventions, is now a death threat. I mean, they are actually green-lighting and legitimizing the assassination of Palestinians simply for throwing stones. And it's a war crime, because war crimes, in terms of a conflict, you have to use proportional use of weapons. You cannot shoot at somebody throwing stones at you. That is not proportional at all.
Reports coming out of Iraq suggest an attack on a U.S. logistics convoy in the south of the country. Iraqi media say multiple roadside bombs targeted the convoy in Muthanna governorate. Still, no reports of casualties or possible damage. American troops, as well as their military and logistics convoys, have repeatedly come under attack over the past year. The attacks escalated after the U.S. assassinated top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis in January 2020. Their killings gave a rise to calls for the expulsion of American forces from Iraq. Earlier this month, the U.S. ended its combat mission there and limited it to an advisory one. American Army veteran Seth Manzel says Washington's failures in Iraq are fanning the flame of anti-U.S. sentiments there.
You know, it's not entirely clear which groups are responsible for this, but the continued presence of the U.S. forces are definitely inflaming things there. And since we did such a terrible job of eliminating ISIS, we're suffering the consequences of that, and also. Moreover, the Iraqi people are suffering the consequences of that.
Staying in the region, Saudi warplanes have reportedly carried out fresh airstrikes in Yemen's capital as the kingdom intensifies a devastating war on its neighbor. The report says the kingdom's operation in Sana'a came after the Yemeni army's drone attack on the Saudi city of Jizan. On Monday, Saudi warplanes carried out three airstrikes on Sana'a International Airport. Yemeni officials said the air raids disrupted services at the airport, leading to a halt to the delivery of UN humanitarian aid supplies. Riyadh, along with some of its regional allies, launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed in the onslaught. The World Food Programme has raised the alarm about the dire humanitarian consequences of Saudi Arabia's continued war on Yemen. The UN Food Agency says more Yemeni people will go hungry because it's running out of funds to continue food rations for millions of people.
This is the aftermath of a Saudi attack that hit Sana'a International Airport on Monday. The airport in the Yemeni capital has been one of the main targets of the Saudi military campaign since it began more than 6 years ago. And the recent raid caused severe damage to the facility.
The navigation equipment at the airport was broken 2 days before the airstrike. We have sent a letter to the relevant organization and have purchased the equipment for the tower. The equipment here has been used for more than 7 years, and the related accessories are not available at the local market. In order to ensure the safety requirements applicable to international standards, the Sana'a International Airport system has been unable to operate. Now you can see that the refueling equipment has been completely destroyed after the air attack, along with the refueling vehicles.
Flights into the airport have largely ceased due to the Saudi-led blockade since August 2016. 8 flights, however, were exempted, but now they're suspended following the Monday attack. Saudi Arabia has intensified its air raids on Yemen in recent weeks. That comes as the Yemeni army and its allied Ansar Allah forces are moving closer to fully liberate Ma'rib province, a key region and a major stronghold of the loyalists of the Saudi-backed former regime. Riyadh began its war on Yemen to reinstate that friendly regime led by Abdul Rabbah Mansour Hadi. That goal, however, has not materialized, with the civilian population only bearing the brunt of the war. The UN says hundreds of thousands of Yemeni civilians have been killed, while many more face lack of basic supplies. On Wednesday, the World Food Programme warned that it will have to reduce food rations for millions of Yemenis because it's running out of funds.
From January, 8 million will receive a reduced food ration, while 5 million at immediate risk of slipping into famine conditions will remain on a full ration.
The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, has alarming figures, too. It says about 2.3 million children under the age of 5 suffer from acute malnutrition. of them, 400,000 are expected to face life-threatening severe malnutrition in the coming months. All those figures are the latest that international bodies have provided to show how life goes on for Yemenis under relentless Saudi strikes and its blockade. But the international community takes no practical action to end the Saudi war. Riyadh's Western allies are silent, too, despite their claims of being the world's leading human rights defenders.
Turning to other news now, a full ceasefire is to be restored in eastern Ukraine owing to a fresh agreement between Moscow and Kiev to make an earlier deal work out. The trilateral contact group made up of Ukraine, Russia, and the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe has reached the agreement in an online meeting. The trio say they're fully resolved to adhere to the 2020 truce deal. Meanwhile, Russia's ambassador to the European Union has said again that Moscow is not preparing for an attack against Ukraine or any other country. The ceasefire between pro-Russia forces and Ukrainian troops has been fragile, with the two sides blaming one another for occasional violations. The conflict broke out after the Crimean Peninsula rejoined Russia in a referendum 7 years ago. The confrontation between Russia and NATO over Ukraine continues. Now, Russia now says that the security guarantees that it wants have been incorrectly interpreted as ultimatums by critics. But the question is how realistic it is for Russia to expect any kind of guarantee when both NATO and the US have broken the promises they made before. Not to mention that the US has even gone as far as willfully breaking international treaties.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin has warned the U.S. and NATO, saying its security demands must be guaranteed over Ukraine. Putin made the remarks in a speech to senior Russian military officials. He blamed the West for escalating tensions in Europe, saying Russia would respond adequately to any Western aggression and would develop its army further. He said it's Moscow's right to counter NATO's movement.
Russia stands for equal and indivisible security throughout the Eurasian area. Of course, as I have already noted, if our Western colleagues continue their aggressive course of action, we will take adequate military and technical actions in response. We will react toughly to unfriendly steps. And I want to emphasize, we have every right to do so. We have every right to take actions aimed at ensuring the security and sovereignty of Russia.
The point is that NATO can't be trusted. The United States can't be trusted. The fact that the United States is now in the Ukraine, they've stationed troops there, backing this fascist regime in the western part of the Ukraine. Victoria Nuland was involved in the coup d'etat that overthrew the government there.
Putin added that he considered NATO's further expansion into Eastern Europe a consequence of the euphoria that stemmed from the West's apparent victory in the Cold War. He also said Moscow no longer views the West as a dependable partner. Russia has been seeking written assurances about the presence of U.S. troops and hardware near its borders, but it says those assurances could not be depended on. Putin's remarks come shortly after Moscow issued two documents. One of the documents was addressed to NATO and the other to the U.S. officials. They made requests over a range of guarantees aimed at boosting the security of all parties. The proposals focus on the movements of military personnel and hardware and include the requirement that Ukraine's long-held requests to become a member of the bloc would not be granted. A separate document calls for current NATO members to desist from any military activity on Kiev's territory, as well as in Eastern Europe, the South Caucasus, and Central Asia. Russian Defense Ministry says the U.S. has deployed around 8,000 military personnel near its borders.
The escalation that has erupted between the U.S. and NATO on one side and Russia on the other has taken a turn for the worse with militaristic undertones. Russia has threatened NATO on more than one occasion after the alliance's troop buildup on its border. Once, it even said that it may deploy tactical nuclear weapons. and this is all due to the U.S. insistence that Russia is preparing to invade Ukraine, despite firm denials by Moscow.
Tensions between Russia and the West have been running high for several years, but the current standoff began almost immediately after U.S. President Joe Biden took office in January this year. Biden and Ukraine's President Zelensky attempted a more assertive policy vis-a-vis Russia.
If the Ukraine becomes part of NATO, NATO will put missiles on there, and the missiles will be 5 minutes away from Moscow. Putin clearly sees this as a threat, and he's massing troops there to prevent this from happening.
Zelensky also attempted to bring the Crimean issue back in the spotlight by issuing a decree on the deoccupation of the peninsula, annexed by Russia in 2014. Russia has amassed tens of thousands of troops on the border with Ukraine, demanding that NATO refuse to accept the former Soviet Republic as a member and guarantee that no weapons or troops will be deployed there.
So it's obvious that NATO has aggression in mind. It's aggression against Russia. They've never given up the dream of breaking up Russia. They broke up the Soviet Union to a large extent. Now they want to break up Russia.
U.S. is trying to take over the Ukraine peace settlement effort, previously led by France and Germany, and pressing Russia into making concessions. Russia views the move as a dangerous measure.
The United States has broken every promise it's made to Russia. So Russia now wants some type of guarantee that it can depend on that can establish its own sphere of influence. That's what he's trying to do.
Washington is also doubling efforts to derail the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline project, which is meant to supply Russian natural gas to Germany. For Putin, this is a key project that allows him to bypass Ukraine, save billions in transit fees, and avoid political headache. Scrapping the project would give Ukraine a great leverage against Moscow.
We're going to turn to some coronavirus news now. Europe once again becomes a COVID hotspot as daily infections reach record highs in different countries. The fast-spreading Omicron variant is blamed for the surge. New daily cases now surpass 106,000 in Britain, the highest daily tally in the country since the pandemic began. Elsewhere in Western Europe, France says it's on a war path against Omicron. The country reports over 84,000 new cases, its second highest tally this year. The French government predicts that daily cases will hit 100,000 there by the end of the year. Neighboring Italy is also witnessing a rise in its 24-hour infections. The COVID surge has already prompted some European countries to tighten restrictions just ahead of New Year holidays. Germany is one of them. The country says it will limit private gatherings to 10 people. And the Australian government is imposing restrictions in its two most populous states amid a surge in COVID cases. It is now mandatory to wear masks indoors in public places in New South Wales and Victoria. Venues also have to limit visitors and reactivate customer check-in via vaccine cards. Australia is recording its highest daily infections today. That's 8,200 new cases, a big figure for a country that's been successful in keeping the virus at bay. Officials are linking the spike to the highly infectious Omicron variant.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
onto our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
The New York Attorney General, Letitia James, said on Monday, 20th of December, her investigation of Donald Trump's business affairs would continue undeterred, despite Trump suing to stop it on grounds of political bias, because no one is above the law, not even someone with the name Trump. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, New York Attorney General Vows Trump Investigation Will Proceed Undeterred. York Attorney General Letitia James said on Monday, 20th of December, her investigation of Donald Trump's business affairs would continue undeterred, despite Donald Trump suing to stop it on grounds of political bias, because no one is above the law, not even someone with the name Trump. The New York Times first reported Trump's lawsuit, filed in federal court in Syracuse, New York. It alleges that Letitia James, a Democrat, is guided solely by political animus and a desire to harass, intimidate, and retaliate against a private citizen who she views as a political opponent. Letitia James is investigating whether the Trump Organization manipulated valuations of its real estate properties. In one such instance, as Donald Trump ran for president in 2016, The Guardian reported on different valuations of a golf club outside of New York City. The headline, "How Trump's $50 million golf club became $1.4 million when it came time to pay tax." The Washington Post and other media outlets have also reported similar alleged practices at other Trump properties. Last year, investigators working for Letitia James interviewed Eric Trump, one of former president's sons and a Trump Organization executive. Letitia James went to court to enforce a subpoena, and a judge forced the younger Trump to testify after his lawyers canceled the deposition. In an investigation that could only result in civil charges, Letitia James recently said she would seek to question Donald Trump under oath. It is rare for law enforcement agencies to issue a civil subpoena for testimony from a person also the subject of a related criminal investigation, partly because the person could simply cite their Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. It is unlikely that Trump's lawyers would allow him to be deposed unless they were sure his testimony could not be used against him in a criminal case. Donald Trump's business and tax affairs are also the subject of a criminal investigation run by the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance, which has been in progress for more than 3 years. Letitia James joined that investigation in May of this year. The Manhattan case includes a focus on whether the Trump Organization overstated the value of some real estate assets to obtain loans and tax benefits. In their lawsuit against Letitia James, who recently announced a run for governor of New York before stepping back, Trump and the Trump Organization claimed the Attorney General has violated their rights under the U.S. Constitution by pursuing a politically motivated investigation. Donald Trump and the company pointed to public statements that Letitia James made before she was elected as Attorney General. The lawsuit also made a plainly political play of its own, echoing Trump's language in office and on the campaign trail when it said, "Rather than diligently prosecuting actual crimes in the state of New York, which are steadily on the rise, James has instead allocated precious taxpayer resources towards a frivolous witch hunt." Donald Trump and the Trump Organization are seeking a court order barring the investigation from going forward. In a statement, Trump's attorney, Alina Haber, said, "By filing this lawsuit, we intend to not only hold her accountable for her blatant constitutional violations, but to stop her bitter crusade to punish her political opponent in its tracks." In her own statement, Letitia James said, "The Trump Organization has continually sought to delay our investigation into its business dealings, and now Donald Trump and his namesake company have filed a lawsuit as an attempted collateral attack on that investigation." To be clear, neither Donald Trump nor the Trump Organization get to dictate if and where they will answer for their actions. "Our investigation will continue undeterred, because no one is above the law, not even someone with the name Trump." York Attorney General Letitia James also noted that in August of 2020, she filed a motion to compel the Trump Organization to provide documents and testimony from multiple witnesses regarding several specific Trump Organization properties and transactions. Since then, the court has ruled in Attorney General James's favor multiple times. Last month, Donald Trump's former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, who served a three-year sentence for offenses including campaign finance violations relating to a payoff to Stormy Daniels, who claims an affair with Donald Trump, was asked about the prospect of Trump being indicted in the criminal investigation in Manhattan. Michael Cohen said he was confident that prosecutors could indict Donald Trump tomorrow if they really wanted to, and they could be successful. Asked if he was confident, "You did help Donald Trump commit crimes," Michael Cohen told NBC. "I can assure you that Donald Trump is guilty of his own crimes. Was I involved in much of the inflation and deflation of his assets? The answer to that question is yes." In July, the longtime Trump Organization Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg pleaded not guilty to criminal charges in what a prosecutor in Cyrus Vance's office called a sweeping and audacious 15-year tax fraud.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The United States is appealing a British judge's decision not to extradite Julian Assange, the Australian journalist and founder of WikiLeaks. In January, Judge Barretzer found that U.S. prison conditions would be too oppressive and that Assange would be likely to take his own life. In response, the United States has taken to the High Court to contest her findings about Assange's health. In addition, the United States has offered up diplomatic assurances, saying that it won't put Assange in oppressive prison conditions, which doctors have said would lead to suicide. So what exactly are these diplomatic assurances that the United States has offered? And can they actually be trusted? How come Assange's health is the center of the discussion when scores of legal experts, academics, journalists, and historians have all warned that this indictment currently poses the biggest threat to press freedoms? To answer these questions, I attended the court proceedings remotely as they unfolded in London's High Court. And this is what I saw. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. The High Court appeal took place on October 27 and 28 of 2021, lasting just 2 days. The United States is appealing Judge Barretzer's decision not to extradite Julian Assange on five grounds. These five grounds can be summed up in two topics. Number one, Assange's health, and number two, the diplomatic assurances. We'll deal first with Assange's health. As we've mentioned before, Judge Barretzer blocked Assange's extradition to the U.S., namely on health grounds. So what has the United States responded? Well, the U.S. lawyers argue that she erred in her judgment, that she didn't apply the test correctly, that Assange doesn't meet the criteria for his extradition to be oppressive. They accuse him of essentially being a malingerer, someone who's pretending to be sick. Professor Michael Kupperman is the lead medical expert for the defense. Kupperman's testimony is very important because the judge relied heavily on it to block the extradition. She said that she preferred his testimony because his notes were more detailed than the other doctors. Kupperman also spent the most time with Assange. So because Kupperman's testimony is so crucial for the defense, the United States lawyers have tried desperately to discredit both the report and Kupperman. In his first psychiatric report, Kupperman did not disclose the relationship between Julian Assange and Stella Morris, or that they had had two children in the Ecuadorian embassy. Although this point has nothing to do with medicine or psychiatry, the United States is exploiting it to accuse Kupperman of misleading the court. They say that his medical evidence should be given little or no weight. Now, Assange's lawyers replied that Kupperman did not conceal anything from the court. He only kept the relationship secret because he was concerned for the privacy and safety of Ms. Morris and her children. This happened right around the time when we were finding out about Assange being spied on in the Ecuadorian embassy, among other things. In her ruling, Judge Bretzer did say that she found this behavior from Kupperman misleading and inappropriate, but an understandable human response to Ms. Morris' predicament. The lead prosecutor for the United States, James Lewis, accuses Assange of being a malingerer trying to avoid extradition. In the High Court, Lewis said that, quote, if he's clever enough, he can get around extradition. It then becomes a trump card, which cannot be dealt with by the requesting state, no matter if the prevention matters are 100 times better than in England. The prosecution argued that Assange did not meet the criteria under the Turner test, meaning he must be unable to resist the impulse to commit suicide. Only that could block extradition. Now, Assange's lawyers respond that Professor Kupperman did find this to be the case. Kupperman said that Assange cannot resist the impulse to commit suicide. If he's extradited, he will take his own life. Assange's lawyers also pointed out that there are people who make plans to take their own lives. That's not impulsive, but it's still driven by their mental disorder. And so it's unreasonable, it doesn't make sense, to say that Assange is not suicidal just because he's not impulsively suicidal. Now, the entire appeal hearing at the High Court is, of course, too large to condense into one episode, but nevertheless, it consisted of various accusations from the prosecution that the defense's medical experts were lacking in expertise or integrity. For example, that Kupperman had misled the court, that Dr. Dealey was wrong in his autism diagnosis, and so forth. Now, the other main topic discussed in the High Court was that of diplomatic assurances. The United States has said that if Assange is extradited, it will not place him in special administrative measures, or SAMs, which are some of the worst prison conditions imaginable. The U.S. also says that Assange won't be sent to ADX Florence, one of the worst prisons in the country. Robert Hood, the former warden at ADX Florence, described it as worse than death. The U.S. also claims that Assange could serve a potential sentence in his home country of Australia. In the High Court, I actually saw Lewis say that Assange can't be that suicidal because he can look forward to going to jail in Australia, as if going to jail in one's home country is something that every journalist dreams of. Now, the prosecution claim that they weren't given a fair chance to offer these assurances before, and had they, the judge would have decided differently. Well, Assange's lawyers point out that this isn't true. They say the United States had many opportunities to offer assurances that Assange won't be placed under SAMs. Instead, the prosecution not only said that SAMs are possible, but that they're okay. They said that Assange can play crochet and write poetry and self-recreate, which essentially means going into an adjacent empty room to spend time by himself. Now, Maureen Baird used to be the warden of a notorious jail in New York, Metropolitan Correctional Center, MCC. She testified at Assange's hearing and described what prison conditions are like in pretrial SAMs. She said that inmates were in solitary confinement, technically for 24 hours a day. There was absolutely no communication by any means with other inmates, and the only form of human interaction they had was when the guards came to inspect their cells or give them food through the slot in the door. Last year, when I was in court at the Old Bailey, I heard anonymous testimony from former employees of UC Global. UC Global is the Spanish firm in charge of security at the Ecuadorian embassy where Assange had been given political asylum. Now, the employees described how the United States got them to spy on Assange by installing cameras and secret microphones, and there were even discussions about physically hurting or kidnapping the WikiLeaks founder. And last week, for the first time, we saw the Yahoo News story brought up in court. Published in September, it has 30 U.S. officials admitting that the CIA was discussing plans to potentially assassinate Assange or kidnap him in London. This corroborated what we already knew from UC Global. Assange's lawyers pointed out that even former CIA Director Mike Pompeo confirmed this to be true. So if the decision to place Assange under SAMS is up to the Attorney General with kind input from the CIA, of course they're going to put him in SAMS. This is the same agency that was discussing maybe killing Assange. It's the same agency whose files he published in 2017 in the Vault 7 leaks. There is no doubt that they will put him in SAMS. Now, Assange's lawyers explained that even if Assange isn't placed in SAMS, which is certain he will be, he can still be put in other oppressive conditions. Mark Summers, Assange's lawyer, said, "You can proceed entirely confident that in the event of surrender to the USA, Julian Assange will enter into administrative segregation, ADSEG, at Alexandria for years." He added that ADSEG is isolation. There is no assurance from the US not to place Assange under ADSEG. All the evidence, including Cromberg's, is that ADSEG is in prospect for Mr. Assange. Assange's lawyer, Mark Summers, added that even if ADX Colorado is off the table, Assange would be sent to a communications management unit, or CMU. It's a prison within a prison, an experiment in social isolation. Correspondence is limited to 1 6-page letter a week to one recipient. And in regards to being sent to Australia, Assange's lawyer argued that, first of all, Australia hasn't even accepted or said yes. And even if it did say yes, who says that future politicians would agree? We have no idea who will be in power in 10 years when this process is actually finished. This is a process that could take a very long time, and Assange would most certainly be in isolation for the entire duration. That isolation would lead him to take his own life, as doctors confirmed to the court. Now, the United States lawyers said that these assurances are solemn undertakings given out at the highest order. These are not dished out like Smarties. Lewis added that the United States has never broken a diplomatic assurance ever. Now, Assange's lawyers don't believe that to be true. They say these assurances can't be trusted because they are worded in a way that binds the prosecutors but not the Department of Justice. So even if Assange is extradited and placed in SAMS and he complains, the Department of Justice can just say, "We never promised you that." Assange's lawyers gave examples of other people who were given false assurances by the U.S. They were extradited, thinking they'd be placed in a medical unit or hospitalized, and then sent instead to ADX. The United States even has a disclaimer in the assurance where it practically admits that Assange will be placed under SAMS. It says very clearly, Mr. Assange will not be subject to SAMS or imprisonment at ADX unless he does something that would warrant to them, like threatening national security. This means they certainly will place him under SAMS because the whole case is built on the false premise that Assange and WikiLeaks endangered national security. Assange's lawyer, Mark Summers, added that even in the event of acquittal in the United States, what Gordon Cromberg could do is summon him before a grand jury, incarcerate him for civil contempt, and place him in a special housing unit. So even if Assange is acquitted, he could still go back to jail. And it's not just a possibility, it's actually a likelihood, because Cromberg did precisely this to Chelsea Manning when she refused to testify against Julian Assange. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities.
Now joining me is Kevin Gostola, an American journalist whose work focuses on whistleblower and national security cases. Besides the Assange court hearings, he's also covered the cases of Chelsea Manning, John Kiriakou, Daniel Hale, and others. Kevin is also the managing director of Shadowproof, as well as producer and co-host of the weekly podcast, Unauthorized Disclosure. So Kevin, given the United States history, what they've done to other prisoners who were also given so-called assurances, not diplomatic ones, but nevertheless, They were misled, weren't they? I mean, if we look at what they did to Daniel Hale just a few months ago, or Chelsea Manning, which you both covered, do you lend these diplomatic assurances any credence above others?
All four of these assurances have significant loopholes. I'll start with the more generic thing that we should really look at, which is the UK government is supposedly the government that would represent Julian Assange's interests if he did not think the US government upheld the assurances that are given by the US government. So in other words, what we see in the United States' argument to the High Court of Justice that we should trust the US government's assurances is that he would have the ability to file some kind of a challenge if he didn't believe that they were being upheld. And he would first go to the UK government, and they would tell the US government that Julian Assange says he isn't getting the medical care he needs, or he believes it's wrong that he's been put in special administrative measures, or that he's in these restrictive solitary conditions in Alexandria Detention Center while waiting to be put on trial. And that is ridiculous, because the UK government, I can't imagine wanting to be any sort of ally of Julian Assange, given what they've done. Well, first off, this isn't really even about the case, but we know from Italian journalist Stefania Merizzi that the UK government has actively fought Freedom of Information Act requests for basic details about what these services in the country, like the Crown Prosecution Service, I think she might have even asked for records from the police department, what they were doing in order to target people who are associates of WikiLeaks, like Kristen Harrison, who's now the editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks, Joseph Farrell, Sarah Harrison, who, by the way, is an unindicted co-conspirator in the latest indictment in this case, something that is concerning. And so she's asked for these records, and they won't give them to her. And then also we know that there are records that have been destroyed historically related to the Assange extradition, going back to the Swedish case. But in the last decade, we know that there are records that no longer exist because the government actually destroyed those records. And this is the government we're supposed to believe will advocate for Assange to the U.S. government, that he should not be mistreated and that his human rights should be upheld. It's laughable.
You know, we heard things in court about how Assange could communicate with prisoners above and below through the plumbing. You know, Kronberg insists that ADSEG is not isolation. I mean, what do you think of not just ADSEG, but also the other kinds of hellholes they could put Assange in, right? Because his lawyers pointed out there's a possibility of being sent to a CMU or an SHU. I mean, are these, you know, prisons that different from ADX? You know, having covered Chelsea Manning and Daniel Hale's trials, you know all too well that they have a way of putting these people through enormous suffering, don't they?
Yeah. So let's take Chelsea Manning. She went through untold amounts of suffering for a year in a jail, refusing to cooperate with this grand jury. And toward the end, she attempted suicide yet again. Another time she had attempted suicide when she was at Fort Leavenworth serving her sentence, her military prison sentence. So again, this put her in a position where she was near a psychotic break, and she attempted suicide, and she did that because of the conditions of her her jailing, her detention, while she was resisting a grand jury subpoena. She didn't know when she was going to be released. She ended up being released a few days after attempting suicide. This happened to her. If it happened to her, it could happen to Julian Assange while he's awaiting trial. This is the same jail that Daniel Hale was sent to while awaiting sentencing. They put him in there because they wanted to make everyone believe that his post-traumatic stress that he has from the moral injury of being involved in the drone program was something that was driving him crazy, and he was going to do self-harm to himself. His therapist actually ratted him out to pretrial services, and he ended up being thrown in jail and not able to prepare himself for going to prison. You know, do things like find a home for his cat, take care of any bills that he had, outstanding payments, put all of his things in order so that he could then go to prison, something that a lot of people get to do when they know that they're going to be going off to prison. And they deprived him of his ability to do that. He was just picked up, taken to a jail, and he hasn't been free since. And now he's in a CMU, a communications management unit, and there he is in conditions that, in terms of social visits, it's actually worse than special administrative measures. It's been described as worse by the Center for Constitutional Rights, because you do not have contact visits with any individuals who come to see you. So immediate family come, Stella, her children, his children come, Gabriel and Max, and he's on the other side of a partition. There's glass. He speaks, you know, I think he grabs the telephone, think of like the movies where they talk through the glass. He never gets to touch. He never gets to hug. He doesn't get to kiss his kids. They don't get to sit on his lap. He doesn't get to share any moments with them while he is in this facility if he gets sentenced to a CMU.
So besides an SHU or a CMU, I mean, what else could they do? Because ADSEG is pretty much guaranteed. If you ask me, SAMs are also pretty much guaranteed. Do you also feel that way, that these things are you know, practically set in stone for Assange?
Well, the other thing we should be concerned about, and Kronberg lays it out very clearly, is that Assange could be put in protective custody because he's a high-profile prisoner. And what that means is they get to do all sorts of things that they did to Chelsea Manning when she was first detained and was awaiting trial. You remember the international scandal that was sparked by her treatment at the Quantico Marine Brig, which has since been shut down. It actually does not exist. There are not people detained there anymore. And so, and in that facility, I remember they took her clothing away, they took her underwear away, they took, you know, they made her wear the suicide smock, which I saw displayed during the court-martial. I saw her put it on and demonstrate what it was like. It's just like itchy, uncomfortable thing that, like, nobody would be comfortable sleeping in, and especially in a prison. And they did this to her by twisting her words against her and reading into it the worst intentions. It was sarcasm, or she was talking about, you know, like, if you're going to do this to me, I could take the elastic in my waistband and I could do this with it. And then, just, I guess, to be a smart aleck, the military person who was overseeing her treatment decided, well, we need to take this seriously and take all of the clothing away. And when they called roll in the morning, she came out of her cell and she's completely naked. Everyone else has on what they're wearing in the prison. And everyone, you know, the people who are doing security for that prisoner, sort of like, why is this inmate not have any clothing on? She was treated like that as part of protective custody, the idea that they had to make sure no matter what, she survived and made it to her trial. Don't think they won't do the same thing to Julian Assange. They will say that they are putting him in restrictive conditions to protect his own safety in order to prevent him from doing anything to himself. They will take his mental health. They will use all of the worst claims that the defense has made to try and save him, and they will turn them against Julian Assange so that he is even more miserable, if you can believe it. I mean, you may not think, how could you be more miserable? They will find a lower low that they can take this while he is in confinement.
So, Kevin, a lot of people ask you and me when we're covering this case, when we'll get a decision from the judges, where we think this is going. When you or I were talking last time, you pulled out this very big chart with all the possibilities of where Assange's judicial process could go. Could you maybe walk us through all these various outcomes?
Yes, so if you look down at the left part of the screen toward the middle, you'll see that it says the U.S. appeals to the High Court. That's where we are. We're also, I think there's another box that has U.S. appeals to the High Court. But that's not the same route. Anyways, if you go down to the bottom here, now where you're circling, there are three actions that can happen. The court can dismiss it. Well, then what's going to happen is the U.S. will appeal and it'll go before the Supreme Court. If it accepts these assurances, these diplomatic assurances that we do not find to be of any value, then it'll potentially go back down to the district court level. And so you basically go back to go, and you have a hearing before, I hope it would be a different judge and not Vanessa Beretzer, but I suppose things have been kind of bizarre already, so maybe she gets to have another crack at it. And but again, I would think that it would be a different judge. It should be. And they would have a hearing on these assurances and discuss why the legal team for Assange would have a hearing much like the extradition hearing in September 2020. And they would say, look, you know, we're sorry we have to do this. We don't like being here. The U.S. should have put these forward a long time ago, but now they have. And we're here to put evidence and bring forward witnesses and say that we do not believe that these assurances should be taken seriously. And then the judge would review them and decide, based on those assurances, whether to reject the extradition request or not. And then the appeals continue, and we go back to the High Court for another hearing, and then we go back to the UK Supreme Court for another hearing. And then that's the last stage.
Kevin Gostola, thank you so much for your time and your brilliant reporting. Keep up the good work. It's a pleasure speaking with you. No date has been set by the judges on when they will hand down a decision, but they did say they were given a lot to think about. And I agree, there is a lot to think about. Namely, why is this entire hearing focusing on Assange's health? You know, we can now see very clearly why January's decision was a positive but an inadequate one. While the judge blocked the extradition, which is good, she only did it on health grounds. Meanwhile, the political charges, she agreed with them all. So right now, the whole discussion has shifted to Assange's health. You know, WikiLeaks published evidence of war crimes carried out by U.S. forces, intelligence agencies, and their allies. But instead of holding those politicians and soldiers accountable, the British justice system, at the behest of the United States, is putting Julian Assange on trial. And not just that, but his mental health on trial as well, reinforcing negative stigmas and stereotypes about mental illness. And when we talk about assurances, it's very important to point out the U.S. has broken promises it made to other prisoners many times before. They purposely word these things in a way that binds the prosecutors, but not the Department of Justice, which means they're useless because the Department of Justice is the only one who has the power to grant these assurances in the first place. Let's be clear on something. Even if Assange were in perfect health, he should not be extradited because it is the wrong thing to do. Even if the United States says it will place him in a five-star hotel, it's still not okay to extradite him for doing his job. What is happening here is unprecedented. This is a vendetta. It's a witch hunt against Assange because his journalism threatens the most powerful armies and governments on Earth. A journalist should not have to prove that they are sick and suicidal beyond hope just to avoid extradition to a foreign country they have no connection to. If Julian Assange is suicidal in the first place, it is because they have made him this way by persecuting him. He has been persecuted by the same government that now claims it will treat him well. I'm sorry, but if you think the United States is not going to lock up Julian Assange in some dark hellhole the moment he sets foot on U.S. soil, then you're really kidding yourself. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
The Limelight.
The head of the World Health Organization delivered a stark warning recently about the state of the coronavirus pandemic as the highly transmissible Omicron strain continued to rip through large swathes of the global population, posing the greatest threat to poor countries that have been denied access to vaccines. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Holiday Omicron Wave Could Mean Overwhelmed Health Systems and More Deaths. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. the head of the World Health Organization, has delivered a stark warning about the state of the coronavirus pandemic as the highly transmissible Omicron strain continues to rip through large swathes of the global population, posing the greatest threat to poor countries that have been denied access to vaccines. There is now consistent evidence that Omicron is spreading significantly faster than the Delta variant. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom said during a media briefing, referring to the previously dominant COVID-19 strain, adding, "And it is more likely that the people who have been vaccinated or have recovered from COVID-19 could be infected or reinfected." Tedros voiced particular concern about the collision of Omicron and crowded holiday celebrations, which he said will lead to increased cases, overwhelmed health systems, and more deaths.